Hi, this is Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you are now listening to Strange Fruit on WFPL.
All right, so October is National Pride Month, where we celebrate and recognize all the accomplishments of LGBT folks all around the nation.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride Month to you, too. And it's also Pride Week at U of L.
Yes, it
where
is.
The students there celebrate their own accomplishments and recognize the wonderful things that queer students are doing on U of L's campus.
Yes, and today we have a great episode. We got a chance to interview Chris Hartman of the Fairness Campaign and Colton Wilson, who is one of my students at U of L.
And also my favorite interview, the legendary Mandy Carter, who's been an activist for the better 45 years, who I consider a personal hero and a personal mentor. So we have some wonderful conversations to talk about today.
Yeah, so we hope you enjoy Strange Fruit today.
Chris Hartman has been the director of the Louisville Fairness Campaign since 2009. He's the former communications director for Congressman John Yarmuth. So Chris, October is LGBT History Month. You've been with the Fairness Campaign for several years. Fairness is certainly the foremost organization fighting for queer equality here in our city. Can you give us, in the last 20 years, kind of how we are where we are today?
Yeah, and I know that you know the history too, Jason, because of course you've been involved in fairness longer than I have. But I think anyone who knows the history knows the intersectional approach that the Fairness Campaign has taken to civil rights and how unique that is across much of the nation, that really our struggle for queer civil rights in Louisville came out of the struggle for Black civil rights in Louisville. And the co-founders of the campaign never saw the two really as being separate. That perhaps we had different legislative goals in that we had a specific fairness law that we wanted to pass that addressed anti-discrimination protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender folks in employment, housing, and public accommodations. But the way we got to that goal was to work on all issues of intersecting oppression, acknowledging that racism and classism and sexism and homophobia are inevitably intertwined. And so when the campaign was founded in 91, we worked from that framework. I say we. I was in grade school, as I know you were too,
yes,
Jason.
And
so all of us here at the table were. But that's the way that they worked, and we lost many times. The Fairness Ordinance came up for a vote over and over and over again. And in 99, when it finally did pass, I think the story that I love the most is about how transgender rights ultimately made it into the law. So the Fairness Campaign was never going to accept a law that did not include gender identity.
Tell us more about what that means.
Yeah.
So does not every state necessarily with gay and lesbian protections, mm-hmm. do they not all include trans folks? Does that not always come along with it?
Or? Yeah, no. Sometimes you can separate the package, apparently, because, you know, the bus always comes back for those who get left behind, right? Oh, wait, no, it doesn't as we know.
Exactly.
And so even we saw in at the federal level, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act in 2007 had the trans population written out of the law in some political wheeling and dealing in an attempt to get a watered-down law passed that would have just protected gay, lesbian, and bi people, because once again, those are the folks that look right appropriate for the role. These are the mm-hmm. safe people, right? And that's the logic in the legislature and in many state legislatures as well. So many states and also many cities that have anti-discrimination fairness laws only protect folks on the basis of their perceived sexual orientation and not their gender identity. But in Louisville, we were never going to accept that. And there was some hemming and hawing in the Board of Aldermen when the law was getting ready to come up about whether or not gender identity would be included. And what I love is that it was George Unseld, you know, one of those unlikely allies, 6'7", you know, 200 some odd pound, African-American basketball all-star George Unseld, heterosexual, who sat in the meeting at the fairness office and listened to trans people tell their stories and was the one who leaned all 6'7" of himself back in his chair and said something to the effect of, you know, I may never quite get all of this gender identity stuff, but as a Black man, I know discrimination mm-hmm. and I know that's what this is, and trans mm-hmm. people are going into the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so Louisville became only the 26th city in the United States with both lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender inclusion in their anti-discrimination law. We beat New York City by 3 years.
You hear that, New York?
Okay. Welcome to Louisville. Keep okay. it weird.
That is so great.
And, you know, we've had a lot of, in our 20-year history, lots of struggles along the way. Of course, we lost the battle for marriage in Kentucky, which was, you know, wrought with politics. Anybody that has really delved into that knows that this was a plan by the Bush campaign. Karl Rove, a brilliant political architect, really designed the 2004 anti-marriage movement in order to get evangelicals to the polls who might not have gone there if it was just a presidential election and there wasn't a moral issue on the ballot. You know, got them to bus their congregations to the polls, and while they were there to vote against lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer marriage, they also just so happened to vote for George W. Bush. Now, Kentucky's not a swing state, so it's not like, you know, yes, we voted for Clinton, but there was no way Kentucky was going to go for Kerry. But Kentucky got swept up in that wave of swing states where this was intentionally placed to give Bush the edge. And so, you know, the Fairness Campaign fought as hard as we could with No on the Amendment. Folks came together from all across the state. But we were defeated that year, and by a substantial margin. And it elucidates yet again the fact that the rights of the minority should never, ever, ever be placed at the will of the majority, because we will always lose. I mean, mm-hmm. we know that in our history, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And so now, of course, you know, modern day, we're still struggling to pass that anti-discrimination law that'll cover the whole state. And we know that, you know, in Richmond, we just had a lesbian couple kicked out of a park for sharing a brief kiss during a maternity photo shoot. People tend to think that these things don't still happen, but they do, and we see it far too often.
Mm. Now, we know that in popular news outlets, the idea of the gay agenda or the LGBT agenda, right, mm-hmm. or focuses on, right, don't ask, don't tell, or it used to focus on that before it was repealed. And now it seems to be around marriage and military participation. But what are some other struggles that are current right now that LGBT people are facing, you know, outside of the right to marry and outside of, you know, military participation?
Well, we certainly in Kentucky have been working to pass a stronger anti-bullying and harassment law. As we all know, kids are committing suicide at alarming rates, which is not, they're not doing it any more, any less than they used to. It's just that people are paying attention now. Families are speaking out and the media is covering it more. So that's a big issue in Kentucky. But I mean, we look at, so not just school issues like bullying and harassment, but homelessness is obviously a queer rights issue, as is poverty and hunger. You know, for our LGBTQ youth population, it's something I haven't even begun to be able to wrap my mind around, about how we support that population that really ends up with very little resource after their family rejects them or their community rejects them. They end up in a larger city. They don't have any money. They don't have a support network. And then, of course, too often we see folks participating in health risk behavior in order to survive, going into sex work or other things. And that's something that we've got to address as a community. But it's so tough when you're a marginalized and oppressed community to begin with to step in and try to fill all the needs. I mean, I feel like they're just gaping wounds and we only have so many bandages. Where do you put them first? And I don't think we've answered those questions entirely yet.
For folks who want to get in touch with the Fairness Campaign and find out what Fairness is up to, how can we
tweet us? Okay. Oh my gosh, tweet us at Fairness Camp, or of course log on to the web, fairness.org or facebook.com/fairnesscampaign.
All right, our friend Chris Hartman, certainly a history maker. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Chris.
You. Love you all.
We are here with one of my greatest students, Colton Wilson, who has several majors at the University of Louisville. Two of those majors are English and Women and Gender Studies. And today we're going to talk to Colton about Pride Week at U of L, LGBTQ History Month, and some of the most beloved moments in LGBT history. As we know, Pride Week started this Monday at the University of Louisville, and I was going to ask you as a student, could you discuss a little bit about what Pride means to you as a student and how Pride is important to students on campus?
Yeah, well, I think for me, Pride is an event that allows the LGBTQ students on campus to kind of get out of their little niche that they're in, because we have the Office for LGBT Services, which is the one of its kind in Kentucky. But outside of that, there's not really a space for queer students on campus to interact with each other, to discuss the issues that are going on with them. And so for Pride Week to not only highlight those issues, but to bring people in to talk about them and to kind of spread that knowledge to people who are either allies or who have support, but who support the community but don't really know much about it or don't really know the history of things, I think that's something that Pride is really beneficial for.
Hmm. Do you ever remember your favorite event at Pride from any year?
There's always the dance after Pride, which is really good. It brings people together to kind of socialize. But the keynote speeches are typically very good. There's the one on immigration this year, which I think is really important. They're trying to bring discussions of race and class into LGBT areas of focus. There are also typically documentary screenings that focus. I think there was one last year on two-spirited individuals, and then there was one this year on questions about gender and sexuality. And those are events that people actually typically attend, and then it kind of starts the dialogue around campus.
Let's talk a little bit about popular culture, because when I was growing up in the 80s, you didn't have a lot of representations of gay people, especially Black gay people in popular culture. I mean, you had very stereotypical images like the ones I always come back to, like Blaine and Antoine on The Living Color, or those folks on Jerry Springer. I talk about them a lot, but that really was my reality when I was growing up. And so there simply just were not any positive examples of what it meant to be gay or to be Black and gay. You, though, are a kid growing up, a young person growing up in a different generation. So you have Katy Perry, who kissed a girl. You have Frank Ocean, who's recently come out of the closet as a member of the hip-hop community. How important has popular culture been in your self-acceptance, your self-discovery, kind of in the larger landscape of what it means to be a queer person right now? What role does that play?
Oh, I definitely think it's been extremely important. One of the first instances I remember being a kid was watching a news report about Brandon Tina with my stepfather shortly after they had found him beaten and murdered. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of really kind of set me off thinking about these issues. And then growing up, Queer as Folk was definitely, it was a program where I was able to see people, and, you know, they may have been more fluent than I was. They may have been more, they may have had more access to kind of a queer lifestyle than I did. But it was definitely something where I was able to see someone who had similar feelings that I did and was able to realize, you know, that I wasn't alone. And I think that that's something that for my generation specifically that has become even more and more prevalent as the years have gone on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us, Colton.
Mandy Cotter is one of the country's leading African-American lesbian social activists. She has a history of organizing for justice, racial equality, and lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equality that spans more than four decades. She was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. She's also one of the founding members of SONG, a Southern organization called Southerners on New Ground, where she served as its executive director, one of the founding members of the Fairness Campaign here in Louisville, Kentucky, and now is working at the National Black Justice Coalition, actually helped found the National Black Justice Coalition, a national civil rights organization of concerned African-American LGBT individuals and allies dedicated to fostering equality by ending racism and homophobia.
Mandy, I'd like to know from you, what do you consider to be some of the most significant, maybe two or three significant events, individuals, happenings in LGBT history?
Oh, wow. Gosh darn. Good questions, y'all.
Thank you.
Let me see. I have to tell you, when I was coming in on the plane, I was thinking, remember that movie it was called Forrest Gump?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Remember, he always happened to be in these amazing places. And that's what I think the 60s generation really ended up being. And mm-hmm. I was just one of many. I mean, my 44 years is like a whole ton of us that were doing that. But I was trying to think, like, what would be some... Well, August 28th, 1963, even though I was about 12, that will forever have to go down in the history of whoever understood who was there on that day, the impact that had on the entire civil rights movement on that day. Another day would have been... I graduated high school in 1966. Remember when, before gay marriage. Their whole issue was around interracial marriage.
Okay. Yes, they were Loving versus Virginia,
yes.
Right? Okay.
That U.S. Supreme Court decision didn't happen until June 21st, 1967. I graduated high school in 1966. That will have to be a key moment. Only because if you think about the drama and trauma around the issue of marriage equality, I don't like to use the term gay marriage equality. Probably. That set the tone. So if you think about that and then you go into whatever. I also think that the 2008 elections with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama will have to go down as one of the most amazing moments. Because remember, black folk couldn't vote, women couldn't vote. And what did we have in 2008?
Yeah.
Amazing. And each one of them had an LGBT council around them for their elections. Think about that.
Yeah.
And I think it's very interesting that that we consider events that aren't traditionally thought of as LGBT events, right? So the March on Washington is not considered a gay event, nor was the election of Barack Obama. But as we talk about intersectionality and how racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, anti-immigration, all those issues are really connected. And so, yes, the civil rights movement does set the groundwork and the framework for the queer rights movement, and that all those things are connected. I want to go back to the T issue you mentioned about transgender issues. We asked Chris Hartman of the Fairness Campaign about this issue. Oftentimes, there seems to be this disconnect or this beef between the mainstream, regular old gay and lesbians and the transgender community, that they aren't good enough, that they aren't proper representation of our community. Talk more about that, about kind of, are we getting better in relations between trans folks and LGB folks? Or is there still much work to be done in that regard?
Well, I'd say much better. And I have to tell you, I think another one of those, it's so funny because, you know, when something happens at the time, you don't realize the impact. Remember when the Employment Non-Discrimination Act was being acted on? And if you remember, it was Barney Frank and the Human Rights Campaign said, but we're not going to include the transgender because, sorry, we'll come back and get you later because, it's, you know. And for the first time, I saw and our movement said, no, you can. This is not acceptable. No, you include the transgender or you don't. And now, as we see, it ended up being included with the T. That's exactly what happened with women when they were getting the right to vote. They were in Seneca Falls and they had to decide whether black women were going to be added to that issue around whether they would fight for the right for women to vote. They said the same thing. Sorry, we'll come back and get you later. It doesn't fly. And so for this movement, it was called something like United, something for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. That was a transformative moment for this movement for two reasons. One, it meant you do not keep on relying on, we know what's best, or, you know, our polling shows us, who cares? If you're going to be an inclusive movement, you have to include transgender community.
So there is a national gay agenda, if you will, that includes marriage equality, includes included don't ask, don't tell, includes those kind of legislative actions. Certainly there are folks who think that our priorities are different. So I guess my question is, what issues face LGBT folks of color? What issues face LGBT folks who are immigrants and who are poor? Is it marriage equality? Is it military service? Is it gay adoption? Or do we have more pressing issues facing our community, in your opinion?
Excellent question. I was just thinking about this. Here's the question I have. What happens when we get everything we want? This gay agenda? So now we have don't ask, don't tell. Marriage equality is going to probably happen for sure. Here's the question I have. Why isn't the Employment Non-Discrimination Act top of the list? If I don't have a job to pay my rent and put food on the table, excuse me, all, but all due respect, you know, marriage, yeah, okay. And as a pacifist, I have issues, but I understand. So here's what I'm thinking. The way we might want to say it is this. Each and every one of us as an individual has to decide, because of our personal lives and what's going on with us, how do we decide? Now, as people of color, I remember having a meeting when I raised the issue as someone who is a black lesbian, and I said, well, what are we going to do about the immigration issue? Oh, no, that's not a gay issue. Excuse me? Says who? And it might not only just be around racial or ethnic lines. It also might just be about all you know is all you know. And who told you what equality is? And so I'm just thinking, like, there cannot be an and. It doesn't have to be either or. We can do one more than one thing. But here's the biggest question I have. It's a challenge for our movement. And it's a question. Are we about justice or are we about just us? Because the next time I hear someone say, who was that? What was that murder that happened down in Jasper, Texas?
It was Byrd.
James Byrd Jr. Byrd, yeah. A lot of black gay lesbian people said, aren't we going to speak out about hate violence? No, that's not a gay issue until Matthew Shepard happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we said, do you understand the commonality? And what do we have now? The Matthew Shepard, James Byrd Jr. Yes, Hate Crimes exactly. Act. Mm-hmm. And why did it take that? Yeah. And so if we don't understand that it's about justice and equality, however that's defined, and not just around sexual orientation or gender identity, it's a much broader issue. And I want to remind our community, it was women based on gender that were told first, not you. Then it was people of color based on race and ethnicity told, not you. You couldn't vote. You couldn't run for office. You couldn't get a job. So I hope our LGBT movement understands we're not the first. There are those who came before us. And if I hear someone say, well, we're the new civil rights movement, I would suggest, no, we're a continuation of, and we need to pay homage and respect for those who came before us. Well, we're at a moment. Because what happens if I get everything I want? Am I done? I got mine. I'm good. No. Mm-hmm. No, no, no. It's about equality and justice for all.
One of the things that I really enjoyed about all of the interviews that we did for today's episode was this idea that social justice, especially social justice around LGBTQ issues, are not only gay issues, right? That they are also connected to issues of poverty, issues to access of healthcare. I think a lot of the interviews really highlighted the idea of intersectional social justice. And so a lot of times you hear that military or poverty or reproductive rights, those aren't gay issues, but they're most certainly gay issues, right? Access to freedom and the idea of being treated as a full citizen of our country has everything to do with being LGBT. And the thing that I loved most about what Chris Hartman said in the interview was the idea that, you know, LGBT people across all places in the United States, nationally, we are in all communities, right?
Well, let's talk more about that idea of intersectionality, something that we learned from Audre Lorde, that several, especially a lot of New Wave feminists, a lot of those people who are really committed to social justice in contemporary times talk a lot about intersectionality. What exactly does that mean?
Intersectionality essentially means the fact that we as human beings make up all kinds of identities, right? We make up different races, different genders, different sexual orientations, different class statuses, and all of those identities in which we encompass as human beings make us who we are. And they also create the relationship that we have to particular institutions. And when I say institutions, I mean the family is an institution, school certainly, healthcare, all of these things, police, just to be a citizen, the way in which we access all of the things that we need. And because we're intersectional human beings, sometimes our interactions with various institutions or other human beings has a lot to do with who our identity actually is, whether we are black, gay men.
So
whether,
sort of like what lens, through which lens we see the world.
Is yes.
It, people often say, like, what lens do you wear? What hat do you wear today?
Yes, yes.
For me, what that means is, you know, feminism is as much an issue of mine, even though I'm not a woman. Feminism is an issue that is important to me because there are women who I care about. Because I also recognize that someone who is anti-woman, someone who is misogynist, is probably also anti-gay.
Yes.
And that person is probably anti-black and probably all these other things. So it's really important in the work that I do. It's always been important that I understand the intersection of oppressions.
Yes.
And that, as Dr. King said, where injustice exists for one, it exists for all of us. And there's a really, really cool quote by Marlon Riggs when he talks about intersectionality. And he was someone who wrote a lot about what it meant to be both black and to be gay and to be a male. And oftentimes for people like us who are both black and gay, we're asked to pick one or the other. So are you more black? Are you more gay? Are you with the gays? Are you with the blacks? And there seems to be an invisibility among black gay folks because we're oftentimes encouraged to pick either our blackness,
yes,
or our gayness, or our gender. And so Marlon Riggs had a quote where he's asked to choose either be black or to be gay. And he says, asking me to choose between my blackness and my gayness is like asking me to choose between my left ball and my right ball.
Yuck.
And I know it sounds kind of crude. It sounds kind of crude, but if you think about it,
that quote.
I know you hate it.
I love Marlon Riggs, but I definitely understand the sentiment behind it.
Yes. It's my male privilege because, again, I'm a male with two testicles. And if you were to ask a man to choose between, or just say your left arm or your right arm, right?
Or maybe my left breast and my right. I mean,
would you rather lose your sight or lose your hearing? hiring.
I mean,
and
yeah,
it's like, well, why can't I have them both? And so I think that on a very kind of crass and cruel yes. level, it really does drive home the notion. They're like, well, hey,
yes,
you pick one or the other, you know. Yes. And so I think that
I'm all of those things at once. There's no separating. There's no dissecting. Exactly.
Well, when I think about things I'm proud of, I certainly am proud of all the wonderful work that you're doing. I'm proud to have met you. I'm proud to have been.
I'm proud of you too.
I'm proud to be a part of a larger activist community here in Louisville that it really has taught me a lot about what it means to be self-assured and to have an obligation to reach back to others. I'm very, very proud of our little show.
Yes.
I'm proud of Strange Fruit, and I'm very proud to have had Colton, Chris Hartman, and yes. Mandy on this show today. So,
yes.
And we're proud of you all for being our listeners.
Yes. So thank you so much for tuning into Strange Fruit on WFPL. Strange Fruit is produced by 89.3 WFPL in Louisville, Kentucky. Our producer is Laura Ellis.
For more information on Strange Fruit, go to WFPL.org, find us on Facebook, or visit us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod. I'm Jason Gardner.
And I'm Kyla Story. Thanks for listening.